Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1. To Boston, Bloomberg 1200. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app at Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
Good morning, 7:30 on Wall Street. I'm Michael McKee along with Tom Keene, keeping an eye on what's happening in the news around the world that you might be trading on today. Speaking of the bond market, somebody is buying Volkswagen, actually. The European Central Bank buying corporate bonds in euros for a second day, expanding its stimulus program, picking up some debt from the troubled German car maker. They also bought some of tire maker Continental and the French mobile company Orange, this according to Bloomberg News, who cite a person familiar with the matter. In investors in Illinois, not good news. Moody's Investor Service lowering Illinois' general obligation bond ratings by one level to Baa2. That's just two steps above junk. The state has a budget impasse. Can't get a budget passed. UBS is cutting managers at its U.S. wealth unit and recruiting fewer advisors. They said they picked up enough of them in the past 6 months or so. Headcount reduction mostly to hit middle and senior managers, but some at their main offices in New Jersey and in New York. Infosys, that's Asia's second largest software maker, plunged the most in 9 months. The chief operating officer said spending by clients remains volatile. That's sort of the topic du jour here. What's happening with companies and their ability to make money around the world? Let's check in with John Tucker now and get the latest headlines from around the world.
And good morning to you, Michael and Tom. President Obama will try to do some face-to-face mending among Democrats today. He has a White House meeting with presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Sanders has been under pressure to drop out of the race as Hillary Clinton has become the presumptive nominee. At least 15 are dead, dozens wounded after a suicide car bomb attack ripped through a commercial area of a majority Shiite neighborhood in Baghdad today. The House scheduled to begin debate on a bill that would restructure some of Puerto Rico's $70 billion debt and create a financial control board. Some bondholders, unions, and island officials have lobbied against the bill. And rangers in Yellowstone National Park have suspended efforts to recover the body of a tourist who strayed from a boardwalk and fell into a high-temperature acidic spring. Officials say 23-year-old Colin Nathaniel Scott of Portland fell in the spring yesterday. There are no remains left to recover. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by 2,400 journalists in more than 150 news bureaus around the world. I'm John Tucker. Michael and Tom.
Thank you, John. Time now for the Land Rover Parsippany Bloomberg and NBC Sports Update. Here is Rob Buschka.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Carlos Beltran homered for the third straight game. They've all come against the Angels. The bats came alive in a 12-6 drubbing for the Yankees as they nail down the Angels. They're going for a four-game sweep today. Ivan Nova, he gets the call. Chris Parmley actually homered twice as well for New York. The Mets, they avoid a sweep of their own in Pittsburgh. They won 6-5 in 10 innings thanks to Wilmer Flores, who had a bloop single. Noah Syndergaard kept the Mets around. A good quality start. Addison Reed earned his first win of the year. The Mets road trip continues tonight in Milwaukee. Bartolo Colon facing Jimmy Nelson. Game 3 NBA Finals, all Cleveland. The average margin of victory for all three teams, or both teams, has been 26 points in all three games. 120-90 is your final. Cleveland still trails the series 2-1. LeBron James had 32 points. NHL Penguins try and hoist their fourth Stanley Cup. It'd be the first time at home they can do so. They host San Jose tonight in game number 5. That is 8 o'clock with your face-off. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Mike?
Thank you, Rob. Well, we're keeping an eye on markets around the world. We've been talking about bonds, 77 basis points. Your U.S. two-year, your German two-year, negative 55 basis points this morning. This is Surveillance. I'm Michael McKee, along with Tom Keene on Bloomberg Surveillance. We're keeping an eye not just on bonds, but on equities, and the news there isn't any better. S&P futures down 6 points, Dow futures off by 45. In Europe, it's a down day with the Stock 600 down 3 points right now. Time now for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology, investing more than $110 million a year in applied research to solve problems and improve life. Learn more at storiesofinnovation.njit.edu. Here's Bob Moon.
Michael, good morning. Here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. There will be no selling out by Spotify. That's what the music streaming service's chief executive and co-founder, Daniel Ek, told reporters at a tech and music conference in Stockholm today. He vowed Spotify won't ever sell out to a large U.S. tech company because European entrepreneurs who frequently sell their companies to larger U.S. businesses are holding back the region's technology sector. He says the startups could grow to be gigantic if the founders just wouldn't sell. The legalization of recreational marijuana in states such as Washington and Colorado has created a bigger challenge for state and local law enforcement. There's no quick way to know if a driver is stoned. That's partly because the science of highs is, well, sketchy. A May study from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety concluded there isn't a reliable link between impairment and the level of tetrahydrocannabinol, pot's mind-altering agent, THC, in a driver's blood. That usually means a multi-point test examining such things as a suspect's light sensitivity, balance, and eyelid tremors. So authorities are looking to a team of chemists to build a breathalyzer for weed. The scientists are working on a device that looks something like a Game Boy that detects the flow of THC ions. And the septuagenarian chemist leading this project is named Herb, of course, Herb Hill, professor at Washington State University. That's this morning's Bloomberg NJIT STEM report.
I just don't know what to say.
Nothing.
Bob Moon, thank you very much.
All that needed was Jefferson Airplane music in the background.
Well, you know, one pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small. We were just talking with Rick Devereaux from Credit Suisse. He said his big worry in the year going forward is China and the possibility of another big slowdown there. Well, the man who keeps an eye on China for HSBC is the co-head of Asian Economic Research, Frederick Neumann. He is joining us now. Is Mr. Devereaux right to be worried?
There's no risk, real, of a financial crisis in China. China's financial system is strong. The problem is growth, really, and the impact on the rest of the world. And we've seen a bit of a pickup in demand in the first few months of this year, but it may roll over again over the second half of this year. The Chinese government itself promised it will shutter excess capacity to lead to higher unemployment. And China was the engine of global economic growth, but it's sputtering, and I think that's weighing on the world economy right now.
What does rollover mean when we talk about it in the context of Chinese growth?
So it's probably, we look at it in sequential terms. So we had a sharp acceleration going to the second quarter. The industrial production is picking up. The construction sector has picked up. What it means is really the second half, this impulse will fade. That is, we're going to see a slowdown sequentially. In annual terms, we're still above 6%. Sounds great, but it's really the sequential impulse that matters. And so commodity markets might come under pressure again. And all the indicators we like to track, imports, exports, industrial production, all of that will again point south.
When I look at this, and to our comments earlier, Frederick Neumann, the idea of Korea, which we look at as the most vibrant and most dynamic of South Korea, is the most vibrant and dynamic Asian economy, the chart of their exports, the new chronic weakness of exports, culturally, how does that consolidated big business of Korea react to a rollover exports? Do they just go to the government and say, fix this?
That's right. So there's a tremendous pressure on the government to try to engineer more competitive currency. That's been the sort of the game plan for many, many years. The problem is you can't really do this if you have a current account surplus of 8-9% when interest rates globally are extraordinarily weak. So you can't cut your interest rates further, but it's hard to weaken your currency. So currency competitiveness is out. And beyond that, you really have to do your homework. You have to become domestically more competitive. You have to improve.
Okay, but use the Swiss analog here. I mean, the Swiss tried to do this. They're building it up. Euro Swissy this morning is challenged stronger. I mean, what does Korea learn from the Swiss lesson? They're not Switzerland, are they?
They are in some ways Switzerland. They're safe haven currency, or perhaps better like Japan, right? It is the safe haven currency in Asia. And so it is very hard to go against the trend. Korea has to look at other ways of growing. They have to do more offshoring, which is happening. Actually, it's hurting the domestic labor market, but offshoring is one way. And then you have to improve the domestic economy, do all the stuff that really they've been put off for many years, which is liberalize the domestic economy.
Mike, I bring this up, Mike, because it's really the price we're paying for all the other non-orthodox things we're doing. Switzerland faces it. Korea faces it.
No, well, I'm wondering, we know that the Chinese have a major impact on everybody else in their neighborhood, but what about the Koreans with their economy and with their central bank movement today? Do we get the same kind of knock-on effect? Is it as important to what happens, or is it more isolated?
It's probably a bit more isolated. The big elephant in the room in Asia is China. China is breathing down everybody's neck in terms of competitiveness. And in fact, China's going upscale. That is, it's less of a competitive threat to, say, Vietnam and Thailand today. It's becoming more of a threat to Taiwan and Korea and possibly Japan at some point. So what Korea does at this stage in terms of cutting interest rates is not going to really turn the dial. Taiwan might be impacted a little bit, perhaps Japan at the margin, but it's more of an isolated story in that sense. I think what is important about Korea's rate cut this morning is what it says about the state of the global economy. And look at Asia's exports. We've been seeing a contraction in export volumes for seven months.
We're going to come back with Frederick Neumann and talk about this with HSBC Hong Kong joining us in our New York studios right now. What you need to know, the 10-year yield 1.68%, German 10-year 0.04%. Stay with us.
Bloomberg Surveillance is brought to you by Anshin Block & Anshin, named the best accounting firm in North America for the sixth year in a row by Hedgeweek.com.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by VanEck Vectors ETFs. Expect more from your munis. Target tax-exempt income by maturity and credit quality. All with low-cost ETFs. Visit VanEck.com/muni. VanEck. Access the opportunities. U.S. stock index futures are lower, indicating declines for the S&P 500 after a three-day advance took the benchmark close to an all-time high. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P E-mini futures down 7.5 points, Dow E-mini futures down 55, NASDAQ E-mini futures down 13, and the DAX in Germany is down 1.3%. 10-year Treasury up 8/32, the yield 1.67%. NYMEX crude oil down 1% or 51 cents to $50.73 a barrel. COMEX gold, little change, down 60 cents to $12.61.70 an ounce. The euro, $1.1339, the yen 106.52. Restoration Hardware Holdings down 19% this morning after the upscale furniture chain posted a surprise loss and cut its annual earnings forecast. And Chesapeake Energy down 2.8% after the natural gas producer traded new shares for notes for the third time in less than a month as it seeks to lighten its debt load. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. Mike, that coffee table you got from Restoration Hardware, it was like the size of Rhode Island. You know, I guess that just didn't work out for them.
Well, it does enable us to have the entire surveillance staff in one place.
At one place at one time.
Yes.
Well, you can't put them all in the same room. Mm-hmm. There's certain legal restrictions. Peter Buchvar of the Lindsay Group with a very sharp note, Mike. He notes a toxic mix of low yields with rising CRB index. That from Mr. Buchvar.
Well, it's interesting because there's who was it? It might have been Kitchuk's this morning's note. Excuse me for reading so many notes. I can't remember which
I know.
One. Pointed
well,
out that,
yeah,
that
but
the
it's
commodities,
that kind of
are,
day.
Commodities are divergent. You've got metals down, oil up kind of day or week. And so it's hard to make sense of exactly what's happening there. We're talking with Frederick Neumann, his HSBC's co-head of Asian Economic Research. And we were talking offline, Tom, a minute ago about something that's actually quite interesting. We are fixated on Hillary and the Donald here and the presidential race in the United States, but they're watching it in Asia because both of these candidates have come out against the Trans-Pacific Partnership and trade. How much does the U.S. election play into what you do and what you think about?
It's hugely important because Asia lives on trade, on exports, right? That's how we build prosperity in Asia. Now with the domestic side being sort of restrained by the buildup in debt, we need exports to perform better. But there's, you know, with the political winds shifting towards protectionism in the U.S., that will probably – the outlook for exports doesn't look very good. Korea is particularly impacted by that, Taiwan, all these small, highly trade-dependent economies. But even China needs exports to do better. And with these rising protectionism, that doesn't really look good then for Asia.
Well, we've got the same kind of political winds blowing in Europe, the protectionists close the borders, seal things up attitude. What about within Asia itself? You mentioned they live on trade. Is it a different world, so to speak?
Yeah, this is very interesting. China is in the meantime negotiating a pan-Asian free trade agreement. So while the U.S. is pulling back out of Asia, likely not to sign the TPP, it looks like, China is actually negotiating its own free trade agreement with Asia. And this is the first time since the Second World War where we see the U.S. pulling back in terms of leadership of the global economic system and China stepping up and building its rival system, so to speak. So it's important for geopolitical purposes. And one of the reasons why Obama went to Asia and try to reassure allies that, you know, geopolitically we stand with you. But on the ground, trade is going towards China.
I just had a bad feeling of anyone taking over the Mandarin Hotel in Hong Kong, that iconic building from the 60s. It's just please, Mr. Trump, don't take over the Mandarin Hotel in Hong Kong. There's too much history there, to say the least. When you look at the political prism of the United States and Asia, I think they know who Secretary Clinton is. How do they respond to a Mr. Trump?
He was not quite as well known. In fact, in China, nobody really spoke about him until about a couple months ago. But what really brought it onto the map was one of the foreign policy speech of suggesting, for example, the rearmament of some of the allies in Asia, which obviously raised some concern because United States has kept a security umbrella across the region and has therefore kept down political tensions. And that's now starting to fray a little bit at the edges.
I mean, I look at this and I look at the state of Hong Kong, and I don't want to get you in trouble here with your general counsel. What is the relationship of Hong Kong to Beijing? How has it changed in 10 years? I think of Donald Zeng, who was governor a decade ago or so. What's the new relationship?
Well, the overwhelming reality is that economically Hong Kong is becoming a part of the China economy. We're tied at the hip economically, and that's the economic reality on the ground. If you look at tourism, 38 million tourists from China coming to Hong Kong every year. Hong Kong has 7 million people, so you can imagine how important that is for the economy.
You've been on that watch for a long time. I tell people, Mike, that when I say I go to Hong Kong, it's the airport, a Mercedes, a hotel, thank you, Mandarin, or the others, and then back to the airport. That's not going to Hong Kong. You're Hong Kong. How has it changed?
It has become probably a bit more Mandarin friendly over the years. For example, the use of English language has declined quite a bit. It's become much more Chinese, and that way younger people tend to speak more Mandarin than they do English. Older people still speak English. It's interesting, if you go in a cab, and even older cab driver, he speaks English. If you're a younger cab driver, he wouldn't speak English. He speaks Chinese. So that's the gravitational pull of China, and that's being felt across Asia, but particularly in Hong Kong.
So it doesn't feel British anymore?
Less and less British, but, you know, naturally. We've been 20 years, almost 20 years after the handover. So it is becoming gradually more Asian, more Chinese in terms of the feel of the city.
Just a random guess. How long until Hong Kong isn't thought of as a separate place?
I think it'd be a while, actually, to be honest. There is a bit of a, I wouldn't say separate identity, but the people in Hong Kong are quite conscious of some of the institutions they've built up under the British. If you take the court system, if you take the financial system, and so I think there is a realization that you can have two systems, and they will probably coexist for quite some time. I know it's a sort of hackney turn because it's often bandied about, but it is really one country, two systems.
Well, I'm wondering,
in this case.
How soon we think of maybe the Hong Kong stock market is just an adjunct of Shanghai.
Well, but on the other hand, you know, last year we had already in late 2014, we had the Connect come in and people thought the two were merging. But the reality is the stocks are still trading a 30% discount in Hong Kong and there's separate listings. And we see companies delist in Hong Kong and relist in China just recently, for example. So I think in terms of the investor base, it's still quite separate. It'll probably take a few years before that truly merges.
Next week, the MSCI people are supposed to make a decision about China A shares and their inclusion in the emerging market index. Do people in China care? Is it a big deal for them?
It does. In fact, last year, one of the, one of the reasons for the rally, especially the last leg of the rally, was the expectation.
Everybody trying to front run MSCI.
Exactly. So now it's coming back. It's not quite as frothy as last year, the expectations. But there's certainly, it is a bit of a buzz right now. There are other things going on as well, which is a Shenzhen Hong Kong Stock Connect, which could come about. So we have Shanghai, but Shenzhen is also a big stock market. So there is further integration. I think the Chinese are keen to develop the equity market.
I asked you earlier the tip point on yen. You said 100 is a round number. What's the tip point on Chinese weakness? When we see yuan, is it 7.00? Is there a break point where we get a Trichet-like brutal move? In your renminbi?
Well, the controls are stronger that the Chinese have on the currency than the Japanese have, so they could hold the line. But 7 is a very important psychological barrier. And in currency trading, psychology matters just as much as fundamentals, as you know, right? So 7, I think, is really a sort of a line, if you will.
One final question, if we could. The backdrop of HSBC is the exceptional call by your Stephen Major to a 1.50% U.S. 10-year. We say, good morning, Mr. Major, listening in London, 1.67% this morning. How does your world change in Asia if you get Steve Major's 1.50%?
It actually anchors emerging Asia, because as long as U.S. rates do not go up, it actually means that capital will remain in the region. You don't see capital flowing out. But if, we at some point 10 years back up to 3.5%, then things get pretty dicey out there.
Yeah, we're not there yet. Frederick Newman, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. Visiting us in New York, he is with the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank. I love to say that, Mike, the Hong Kong Shanghai.
You come it's just out a of big romantic about it, the old.
Out of the Mandarin on the way to our office, you go across the little trolley tracks, and there's HSBC in Hong Kong.
They will, they'll keep your bar stool, even if the hotel does go.
They renovated it. Trying to remain cheerful.
Yes.
They ruined it.
Shanghai today, closed, no trade. Same in Hong Kong.
Okay, 1.6.
Another holiday they take.
Yeah, a little holiday.
Frederick leaves the country and
Frederick
they take the day off.
Shut down when Frederick Neumann leaves the country. Futures -7. Dow futures -52. The yield 1.67%. Michael McKee mentioning the 2-year to 4 digits, 0.7670. The 2-10 spread showing curve flattening 90.4. basis points, really a flatter yield curve getting to some remarkable space there. Not recession space, but nevertheless, flatter yield curve. The yen 106.50. Another hour of Bloomberg surveillance.